Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
I still can't believe that in just over 3 hours from right now, the Baltimore Ravens and the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to be kicking it off. And if that weren't crazy enough, a 3:40 p.m. Eastern, 12:40 p.m. PT, 10:40 a.m. HT, Hawaii time, kickoff. If that weren't wacky enough, consider the Ravens' starting quarterback situation. Lamar Jackson is out with COVID. That means they've got to go with their backup in a huge December game against their rivals, and their backup is none other than Robert Griffin III, RG3. Freaking RG3 is starting a game in 2020 on a Wednesday afternoon. I mean, that makes no sense. That makes no sense, and that makes all the sense in the world at the same time. I mean, playing an NFL game on a Wednesday afternoon is insane, but why don't we really get crazy with it? No sense in half-assing it. To quote my good friend Ed Milet, let's just max out with it. What's the point of having a normal Wednesday afternoon NFL game? You may as well lean the bleep into it. If you're going to have a Wednesday afternoon NFL game, you sure as hell better have RG bleeping 3 start that game. Now, if I had told you 9 years ago when RG3 was winning the Heisman that he would be an NFL starter in 2020, you would have said, of course, because that guy was electric. That guy was absolutely unstoppable. If I had told you 8 years ago that RG3 would be an NFL starter in 2020, you would have said, of course, because he was even more electric. He was even more unstoppable. He was a Pro Bowler and an Offensive Rookie of the Year. Let me repeat that part. He was the Offensive Rookie of the Year in a rookie class that included Andrew Luck and Russell Wilson. That's how good. That's how unstoppable. That's how electric that guy was. He didn't just beat defenses, he humiliated them. He was an absolute rock star. This guy was a unicorn. He was just as likely to throw a touchdown pass that went 68 yards in the air as he was to break off a 76-yard TD run. He even had his own viral moment. Remember Griffining? Do you remember that? It came from a game against the Saints where he completed a pass to Pierre Garçon. A short pass. Griffin was knocked down. He was sitting on the ground, holding his arms up as Pierre scored. That's how iconic this guy was. Just sitting on the ground, holding his arms up, and suddenly people all over the country were doing that very same thing and taking pictures of themselves. Remember that? Washington won 7 straight games to close out the regular season, and they made the postseason. And this guy pretty much was the biggest thing in the world. Remember it. And then, almost as quickly, it all fell apart. And by it all, I mean it all. Everything. Not just the season, but everything about RG3. This guy went from being the coolest guy on the planet to the weirdest guy on the planet. Allegedly. Remember late in the season, he injured his knee against Baltimore, but he played a few more downs, even though it was clear that he was busted up. Then in the playoff game against Seattle, his knee was destroyed. And from there, everything went straight to hell. Remember that report that he called a meeting with head coach Mike Shanahan, offensive coordinator Kyle Shanahan, and quarterbacks coach Matt LaFleur. He reportedly wrote on the board the following items on a board. This is incredible. Remember this? He wrote for those coaches, 1, change things. 2, change our protections. 3, unacceptable. 4, bottom line. And then asked to speak without being interrupted. And according to Jason Reed, quote, rolled through a list of grievances, stressing that substantive changes had to occur immediately. Scrap the pass protection scheme and start over, Griffin demanded. There were 19 plays, primarily those from the 50 series, and quarterback draws that were unacceptable, end quote. And listen, I'm not saying that a franchise quarterback should not play an active role in determining the course of the offense and the course of his career. But that's quite a crew that he is lecturing about, quote, change things, quote, unacceptable, and quote, bottom line. I mean, that truly takes an amazing set of brass nad to get up on a chalkboard and scratch all of that out to all of those coaches. I mean, like, more amazing than anything that guy ever did on the field, if you ask me. Not only was he lecturing and talking down to his coaches, but he was doing it to a guy with two rings. He was doing it to another guy who went on to change and revolutionize offenses in the NFL, and he was doing it to yet another guy who would go on to the NFC Championship game in his very first season as a coach. All while giving off this vibe of sit the hell down, shut the hell up. I tried doing it your way, now we're doing it my way. It's absolutely incredible. And then the following season, there was yet another incredible report from Mike Silver that Griffin was not happy with the criticism that he was getting from Mike Shanahan. And quote, at Baylor, they didn't put up RG3's bad plays up on the board in the meeting rooms. Sources familiar with the situation say they've asked the Redskins to do the same, but they've refused to this point. End quote. Again, absolutely legendary. I mean, what an outstanding statement. Instead of showing the things I did wrong, how about you show all the things that I did right? That was in 2013. And this is how that went down on this particular show. Gentlemen, this is your quarterback speaking. It is my pleasure to present and your honor to witness the following presentation. Sit back, relax, enjoy your franchise player at work. I present the Washington Redskins versus the Minnesota Vikings in its entirety. Let's get it on.
Y'all ready for this? Robert under center. Turns, play action fake. He's got time. Over the middle, it is caught. Hankerson into Minnesota territory to the 40. Big play by the Skins passing game. Robert, back to pass. Looking, pumps, goes to the end zone at the two. Pump by Reed, and it's a touchdown as he dives in. Great patience by RG3. Robert takes the snap. He's going to keep it on the keeper across the 50 to the 45. RG3 gets a first down. Robert under center, I formation. He's going to play action fake it. Running out of time, goes end zone. Caught, touchdown! Touchdown, Redskins, Logan Paulson.
And that's the game, fellas. Another 158-3 for me. See y'all next week. Bob. Didn't we lose that game? Y'all did, maybe. Not me. The tape speaks for itself. I'm pretty pleased with myself. It's me popping a tongue on my mic. Yeah, hearing that now, it's even more absurd than it was at that time. And at that time, that's about the most ridiculous thing ever. At every turn, it went from bad to worse to completely and totally embarrassing. This guy went from cool to corny. Corny as hell. He left Washington, he went to Cleveland, then he came to Baltimore. And now that guy is starting an NFL game in 2020 on a Wednesday afternoon at 12:40 my time. And it's an important game for a team battling for a playoff spot. And even more insane is who he's going to be playing with. First off, he has not played with a team, or he is playing with a team that has not practiced since November 22nd. They've got 16 players on the COVID list, including six Pro Bowlers. And more specifically, Baltimore had been hoping that Mark Ingram and J.K. Dobbins would be able to play in that game. They're coming off the COVID list, and the hope had been that they'd be coming off the list today, and they would fly to Pittsburgh separately. But according to reports this morning, they are not expected to play. So it looks like it's going to be Gus Edwards and Justice Hill at running back. As for wide receivers, he's going to throw to a group which includes Marquise Brown, Miles Boykin, and Dez Bryant. RG3 throwing to Dez Bryant in 2020. The writing room that came up with that plot twist really outdid themselves. I mean, saying something is the most 2020 thing ever has become the most 2020 thing ever. But RG3 throwing it to Dez Bryant on a Wednesday afternoon at 12:40 really is the most 2020 thing ever. And if I had said to you in 2012 that RG3 would be throwing it to Dez Bryant, you'd be saying, yeah, how many Super Bowl rings do those guys have? Because RG3 was the Offensive Rookie of the Year, and Dez had nearly 1,400 yards and 12 touchdowns that year. And then you'd be thinking these guys had so many rings, they could use them as brass knuckles and break faces. Instead, one guy is making his second start since 2016, and the other guy's playing in his third game since 2017. RG3 to Dez Bryant. What, they didn't want to line up Miles Austin on the other side? Maybe drop Alvin Harper into the slot? RG3, man, I can't wait. The stones on RG3. This guy, man, you know what that'd be like? That would be like me gearing up for my NFL Today hit. And the legend, Drew Kalisky, giving me my assignment and telling me what he wants me to rant on. And then I tell him what my rants are, and he sends me back a few notes and thoughts, and I look them over briefly. I shake my head, and then I hit reply with, unacceptable. Like, you guys have been doing this show 4 years and killing it, but there needs to be substantive changes immediately. Number one, my 3-minute views from Rome need to be 30 minutes. Number two, in fact, the whole show going forward shall just be called Rome. Number three, instead of superstar JB throwing it to me, I am going to intro myself. I will then ask my own questions and then answer them myself. Four, scrap the other segments with legends like Bill Cowher and Boomer. Start over. Five, do we really even need to play the games? Just have more Rome. The end. Bottom line.
Bobby Ramos, bottom line.
I think we'd all agree this has been some crazy, crazy year with a whole lot of stress. And the stress of daily life weighs on every last one of us. I mean, it doesn't matter who you are or what you do, whether you're an elite athlete or just a regular person trying to get through the day, muscle pain and muscle tension is a real thing. I'm no different. This is why I use Theragun. What an amazing product. It's a handheld percussive therapy device which releases your deepest muscle tension using a scientifically calibrated combination of depth, speed, and power. And right now, it does all that, and it's as quiet as an electric toothbrush. That's because the all-new Gen 4 Theragun has a proprietary brushless motor that is so quiet, you're going to wonder if, in fact, it's even on. All while soothing your aching muscles with Theragun's signature power, amplitude, and effectiveness. Listen to me. Try Theragun for 30 days because there is no substitute for the Theragun Gen 4 with an OLED screen, personalized Theragun app, and the quiet and power that you need. It starts at only $199. Go to Theragun.com/Rome. Theragun.com/Rome right now. Get your Gen 4 Theragun today. I've got mine. I use it. I love it. That's Theragun.com/Rome. Theragun.com/Rome. Terry Stotts joining us. Life, and a lot of the steps I take in my life is so I can come out here and be my best and play at the highest level so I can win a championship for this organization and this city. End quote. Obviously, when you talk about Dame, there's no surprise that that's the way he's thinking about things. But how valuable is that for you as a head coach to have a leader like Dame who has that mindset and sets that tone for everybody else?
Well, as you mentioned, I'm very fortunate to have not only a player of Dame's talent, but his leadership. And I've said this many times, when you look through the history, I'm a big history buff of the NBA, but when your best player is your best leader, and you can go, whether it's Magic Johnson or Tim Duncan or LeBron or whoever, the successful franchise, those exceptional players are also your best leaders, and we're fortunate here in Seattle to have Dame. And look, Dame turned 30, and we have a window, and nothing would make everybody more happy than to win a championship during his tenure here in Portland, because he's been a great leader, he's been a great foundation of the franchise and the city the city adores them now, but if we deliver a championship, it would be even more so. It would be legendary.
Oh, no doubt. Terry Stotts joining us. So in terms of that, Dame also said that the two teams that he's been on, the 2014-15 team and the 2019 team that went to the conference finals, were the ones that he felt were closest to a title. I understand this is a really unusual year, and it's obviously early. Does this group that you have, on paper anyway, this roster, how would this group compare to the two groups that he mentioned?
Well, I think they compare favorably, but that's why you play a season. You know, the season, the first season they talked about, 14-15, it's amazing how much the game has changed in that short amount of time. It was a big physical team, LaMarcus Aldridge, Robin Lopez, Nick Batum at three. You know, it was a big physical team. Later on, the game has evolved. We had Mo Harkless and Al-Farouq Aminu at wings, Evan Turner. So it was a more perimeter team, more perimeter scoring. But I think this team has a chance to compare with them. I like the continuity that we have. We've got nine guys coming back from the team last year. We added some good length, defensive length on the perimeter with Robert Covington and Derrick Jones Jr. So I think we are better equipped in today's game to be better defensively, which is where our improvement has to come, obviously.
Talking to Terry Stotts, really quickly, Terry, there was a very busy offseason, in fact. You made a number of moves. I can't even get to all of them, but Carmelo Anthony did re-sign in the offseason. You and I have talked about what he's meant in terms of production and leadership. How pleased are you to have him back?
Well, I told him before he signed with us how important it was. We needed him. You know, getting Robert Covington and Derrick Jones Jr. was really good, one in a trade, one free agency, and getting Rodney Hood back. But we, with Zach Collins being out, we had a glaring hole at the four spot, and we needed him to be on this team to be competitive. What he did last year for us was exceptional, and whether his role is the same this year as it was last year, he's going to be an integral part of the success that we have this year. And I basically told him that before he signed with us.
In terms of Covington, he's an excellent and versatile defender. And then you've got Derrick Jones Jr., who really gets after it on defense as well. So what's that mean to the overall identity of the team, especially on the defensive end?
Well, it's going to change, certainly. And in some ways, it's along the lines of our Mo Harkless, Al-Farouq Aminu model, where we had length at 3 and 4. And I think the way the league is going with more perimeter-oriented and being better on the perimeter is important. We started the season last year with 5 7-footers. Nurk was hurt, but then we had Pau Gasol, Hassan Whiteside, Zach Collins, and Scalabissiere. So with injuries, we were down to one. By the time December got there, we were down to 1 7-footer. So it changes how we approach the defensive end, and I think, like I said, I think we're better equipped to be a better defensive team than we were last year.
So finally, since you mentioned Nurk, he averaged a double-double with 4 assists per game in the bubble. How pleased were you with the way he responded and the way he played in Florida coming off that leg injury?
Well, one of the benefits for us was Nurk was scheduled to come back right when the league was shut down in March, and that extra time, so March, April, May, June, all the way to July, gave him an extra 3 or 4 months to get used to the idea of playing competitive basketball, whereas if he had come back in March, he might have been a little bit more tentative. We might have been a little bit more restrictive with how many minutes he played. But by the time he got to the bubble, he was able to play at full strength. And as I mentioned, when we were in Orlando, both he and Zach Collins, coming off of those injuries and surgeries, didn't show any look of rust or anything from missing that much basketball.
I think you're right, Terry. You guys got there, and the chances of advancing were minimal, and the team got after it and played great, great basketball. He is entering his ninth season as the Blazers head coach, and hard to imagine, but they're going to turn around and run it right back. The preseason opens up against Sacramento for Portland on December 11th. We just covered a lot of ground. Terry, great to have you back. Good to hear your voice. Thanks so much, and I know we'll do it again soon.
Thanks, Jim. Stay safe.
But it's been 4 days now since Matt Patricia got run in Detroit. 4 days. But it had been 87 days since the Twitter account at Eddie P. Lions Fan posted anything on social. That is, until Eddie P. broke that sabbatical this past Monday. Now, what the hell do Fat Matt Pat and at Eddie P. Lions fan have to do with one another? Nothing. Nothing. And I mentioned a conspiracy theory about Michigan earlier. This is a different conspiracy theory. Nothing except for the conspiracy theory that Fat Matt Pat and Eddie P. Lions fan might actually be one and the same, that they might be each other. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Burnergate 2020, not to be confused with Burnergate 2019, which was Kevin Durant, allegedly. Not to be confused with Burnergate 2018, which was Brian Colangelo, also allegedly. Burnergate 2020 is a brand new theory that Fat Matt Pat might in fact have a burner account on Twitter called at Eddie P. Lions fan. The account in question has been dormant since the start of the season, but just started recently tweeting once again 2 days after Patricia was fired. So the timeline would leave you to think that if indeed it is Matt Pat behind that keyboard, he apparently did not do any tweeting during the football season. Not while he was still gainfully employed. But the second he got run, all of a sudden they fire up the keyboard once again. So, what else is making people think that at Eddie P. Lions fan might also be Fat Matt Pat? Well, every single tweet from Eddie P. is in staunch defense of Matt Patricia. And that tends to stick out, right? When absolutely nobody else on planet Earth is going to bat for a 13-29-1 coach who took a playoff team and ran it into the ground. And the same guy who scolded reporters and pressers and pissed off a bunch of players along the way. Remember, fans and players alike celebrated publicly when this guy got canned. Remember, free agents back in 2018 even poured champagne when their time with Patricia was over. So anybody defending Matt Pat is going to get noticed, especially when it's only one person. Because nobody can say anything in defense of this guy. What's more, and if you need more, Matt Patricia's middle name is Edward. So you've got Eddie P., the handle, taking up for Matthew Eddie P., the coach. And it gets worse, or better, depending on your point of view. At Eddie P. Lions fan describes himself in his bio as a, quote, dad of three and a tech nerd. Matt Patricia is also a dad of three and a tech nerd who studied rocket science in college. At Eddie P. Lions fan follows 77 accounts. All 77 accounts belong to football news sources, the Detroit Lions players, and wait for it now, the New England Patriots. Tweets from Eddie P. include, quote, Coach Patricia did what he could with the roster Quinn gave him. Bob Quinn was the problem, end quote. Also, quote, Coach Patricia accomplished more than you ever have or will. If the Lions organization had listened to him, everything would be different, end quote. And then my personal favorite, quote, the Lions would be better off moving on because Stanford is uncoachable, end quote. And you heard me correctly. Dude just misspelled Stafford as Stanford and called him uncoachable. So to recap, you've got a handle with Matt Patricia's middle name and last initial that did not tweet during the football season, who claims to be a tech nerd and a father of three, and is out here defending the indefensible, calling Bob Quinn the problem and saying that Stanford is uncoachable. Never mind that Stanford throws for like 5,000 yards every single season. So now it'd be really easy and even really fun to connect the dots and say that at Eddie P. Lions fan is Matt Patricia and that Fat Matt Pat has got nothing better to do and that he actually has skin so thin that he would do something like that. Man, that'd be so great. But the dots are comically large and in a very, very straight line in order to do that. In fact, way too straight. In other words, the whole thing is way, 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 way too obvious to actually be real. Now, the internet will disagree because the internet is full of morons, and the internet will believe what the internet wants to believe. And if the internet believes hard enough, they can make anything true. But ask yourself this. Would an actual rocket scientist create an account with their middle name and last initial and give their real bio and start thumbing out all sorts of BS about how great they are on a public platform for everybody to see to try to change the narrative? I mean, this guy might be a terrible head coach, but he's not that stupid. He may not be a rocket scientist, but he's not that dumb, because nobody is. And whatever troll pulled off this ruse of the week is getting over big time right now, because actual legitimate blogs are actually playing along. Like, the biggest misdirection that this alleged burner account threw out was laying out from Twitter during the season and waiting until Fat Matt Pat actually got fired to start tweeting once again. But that's not even that long or that hard of a long con, because the con wasn't even that long to begin with. 3 months of sitting around and waiting for the inevitable. How hard is that? That's not that hard nor that long of a con. And then reappearing with the perfect timing to make it look like Patricia had put his phone down while still employed. Don't get me wrong. Like, I badly want it to be so. I just know that it can't be so. However, if for some reason it is so, and I know it can't be, but if it is, then Matt Patricia really is not only not a rocket scientist, but one of the dumbest guys ever. And if that's the case, why not just tweet from a verified blue check account? Because going by at Eddie P. Lions fan with your real bio and pimping yourself is barely one step below that. It's a funny joke. It's kind of a funny play and a funny joke, but it's a joke nonetheless. As much as I would love for that to be true. Imagine Fat Matt Pat pulling out the phone, maybe the Galaxy, whatever he's got. Maybe his flip phone. He's got that pencil behind his ear. Man, I wonder what kind of handle I should go with. How about at Fat Eddie P? This is how much time the internet has on its hands to find something like that. Hey, clones, I've got a question for you. A really important question. Why is Old Trapper beef jerky so good? Hey, listen. I mean, there's something to be said for a family business which stands by quality and produces the world's finest beef jerky. And it is that. Do not be fooled by other brands. All beef jerky is not one and the same. Make sure you choose Old Trapper, where you can actually see the quality right through their iconic Clearview packages. That's why it's in that Clearview package, so you can see exactly what you're getting. Every bite of Old Trapper is amazing because they use only the best ingredients, from their lean strips of beef seasoned with top quality spices to the real wood-fired smoke. Old Trapper delivers quality in every single bite. And Old Trapper jerky comes in four great flavors: Old Fashioned, Teriyaki, Peppered, and Hot and Spicy, all chock full of good protein to satisfy your manliest hunger cravings and to provide real sustained energy. Make sure you have a good supply on hand for you and your family when you hit the grocery store. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Brian Kelly. Brian, nice to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you, Brian. So you're coming off that win in Chapel Hill, where you were without two starting offensive linemen for the entire game. Also, star safety Kyle Hamilton for the second half. There's some specific moments from that game that I want to talk to you about. But overall, what did your team show you by the way they handled that challenge on the road against a very good Mac Brown coach team?
Yeah, really talented offensive football team, and a team that hadn't lost at home. So, we knew going on the road it was going to be a challenge. But, I think it's a football team that we have that believes they're going to win. And has that grit. You know, when things don't go their way, they just dig down deeper and find ways to come together. And so, you know, you have a special team when, you know, those dynamics kind of take place on their own. There's no coaching, there's no yelling, there's no screaming. It's a football team that won't lose, and it can't lose because of that. They just have a strong group of players here.
Notre Dame head football coach Brian Kelly joining us. You know, in terms of that grit that you mentioned, North Carolina scored touchdowns on their first two possessions. In fact, the score was tied 14-14 at the end of the first quarter. It looked like it might be a track meet, but then you held them to 3 points the rest of the way. That was the lowest point total since Mac Brown returned to North Carolina. So what did you make of how your defense played over the final three quarters?
Well, I mean, obviously, things did change. I think first and foremost, we started to get some pressure on Sam. And, you know, any time that you can make a quarterback of his caliber uncomfortable and not in rhythm, and that really was the difference. We got him out of rhythm. First down was outstanding for us. We got him into second and third and long. And then, you know, we're about 25% keeping teams to about 25% success ratio on third down. So we've been outstanding on third down. But it started with first and second down, getting him into long yardages and getting Sam uncomfortable with some of the pressures that we had. And that was really the difference going into especially the second, third, and fourth quarter.
Now, Brian, when you talk about Sam, you're talking about Tar Heels quarterback Sam Howell. In fact, he said after the game that your defensive front, quote, probably played more physical and harder than anybody since I've been here, end quote. And the fact is, it's been a reoccurring theme throughout the season that there's an elite toughness and an intensity to your team. How did you go about developing and approaching that mindset?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. It's developing that mindset. I think, you know, our guys have a great process in terms of how they prepare, but you know, preparation is one thing, and then competition is another. And I think that over the last couple of years, we've really learned how to flip the switch from practice preparation to a competition mindset. And this team has an identity now where when they go out, they want to dominate their opponent. And that takes time to develop that. You have to play free and fast. And in some instances, you can't be worrying about what the score is. You got to be thinking about how you play. And I think our team has developed that identity.
That's really interesting. Brian Kelly is joining us. You know, I talked to Ian Book on this show after the BC game, and I've got to say I could not have been more impressed by him. You have made the point numerous times that he's just a winner. How would you define being a winner? For instance, is it something you can coach into a player, or is that something that player is born with and hardwired for?
Well, I think first and foremost, it starts with, you know, who he is as a person, how he was brought up, the character of the young man, his parents and his family. He comes to Notre Dame and, you know, he goes through some tough times where, you know, the scrutiny of this position that he holds, the quarterback position, you know, you have to obviously have a short memory. And, you know, he is a guy that I think a lot of people picked him apart as the quarterback, but yet he continued to find ways to win. And now that I think, you know, he's at this point where that stuff does not bother him, he just goes out and competes and plays. And because of that, similar to what I was talking to you earlier about in terms of how we play, he's developed this identity where that doesn't bother him anymore. He just goes and plays fast and free. He doesn't listen to the noise. And that's character development. And he's just a wonderful kid. And he loves playing for Notre Dame. He loves playing the game. And you can see it just the way he plays Saturday or Friday, I guess it was when we played. I'm losing track of the days. But, you know, some of the plays that he made, you can see that he's not playing tight. He's not playing afraid to make plays. He's out there enjoying what he's doing.
Yeah, Brian, I think we're thinking about the same exact play. I mean, I know you're mentioning a number of plays, but when we're talking about plays or a play or winners making winning plays, what was going through your mind when he had that flip pass to Michael Mayer on the run across his body from inside his own 20 on third down in a one-score game in the fourth quarter?
You know, I was fine with it. I mean, he looks both ways before he crosses the street here on campus. I mean, you know, he's not a guy that's going to do something that's – you know, putting his team in jeopardy. So if he feels comfortable doing those kinds of things, I'm all for it, because he's not going to put our team in jeopardy like that. So if Ian Butch is making those kinds of plays, we're in for a nice run here the next few weeks.
We're talking to Notre Dame head coach Brian Kelly. You know, Brian, you mentioned also that he kind of figured out what it's like to play quarterback at that school. That's not an easy thing to do, but he figured out that you just got to block out the noise. I would make the argument that you've done the same thing as head coach. As an example, that win over North Carolina was your 101st career win there, second only to Newt Rockne. Like, if we were to go back to what you did after the 2016 season, you're now on the verge of double-digit wins every season since then. I understand that you're not going to rest on your laurels, but do you feel like maybe you've pretty much cracked the code in terms of what it takes to have sustained excellence at Notre Dame?
I think, you know, we've got a very good understanding of what we need to do on a day-to-day basis, the support staff, the coaching staff, what we need to do on a day-to-day basis in developing our players. I think we've got a really good business plan in place for what works at Notre Dame, and that's the most important thing. What works at Notre Dame may not work at another school. It might not work at USC, or it might not work at Oklahoma, but it works here at Notre Dame, and so we're going to continue to do that.
So what is that exactly? Like, what works there? How would you describe what it takes to have that level of success at Notre Dame? What is the process?
First of all, focus in on recruiting the players to Notre Dame that fit Notre Dame. Don't get caught up in looking at, you know, the star rankings. There's a certain young man that you can develop here at Notre Dame that can play at the highest level. And so they've got to be a fit for your business or organization. I mean, listen, all the Fortune 500 companies would tell you the same thing. They're going to hire somebody that fits their culture first, and then they'll develop them on the way. And that's the same thing here at Notre Dame. We're going to recruit somebody that fits here at Notre Dame and develop them along the way. And that's really the core of what we're talking about.
Notre Dame head coach Brian Kelly joins me for another moment. So as I mentioned, Brian, in the introduction, you have clinched a spot in the ACC championship game. How does it feel to know that Notre Dame is going to a conference championship game in its first and only season in a conference?
Well, it was, you know, something that we've never done before, but we're clearly grateful for the opportunity that we were given by the ACC, and so it became a goal. It's the first time we've had it as a goal, and so now we're in. Now we need to do something with this opportunity, and that is, you know, win the ACC championship. So guys are excited about the opportunity. We've got a game against Syracuse that we want to obviously finish off for our seniors. And, you know, Ian Book's got a chance to be the all-time leading quarterback in terms of wins with a win this weekend. So there's a lot at stake this weekend. But, again, I think it gives us this opportunity now that we've never had before that the kids are excited about.
And then finally, that is the final game of the regular season. I understand that that's exactly where your focus is. Let me finally ask you this. With the success that you've had, Brian, your name's going to come up for NFL jobs. I'm just kind of curious how you handle that. I mean, do you owe it to yourself to at least answer the phone, or is that just not on your radar and not of any interest?
It's really not of any interest to me. I think that, you know, maybe a few years back it might have been, but no longer. I mean, I've got a plan that we've got in place here where I feel like this is where my career has pointed me towards, and enjoying every moment of it being here. So we're going to continue to build it here at Notre Dame.
He is the head football coach at Notre Dame. Notre Dame has clinched a spot in the ACC championship game, and they are hosting Syracuse on Saturday. Brian, I really appreciate the visit once again. So good to have you on the show. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jim. Take care.
You too. Let me start with social. Romy, my beef is with every single receiver in the NFL. If they don't make the catch, the first thing they do is make a flag-throwing motion with their hands, and they look around for a call. Mike in Snowbird. Good point. Good beef. Rome, here's my beef. NBA stiffing the Ravens, Steelers, and general NFL fans so that octogenarian grannies can watch the Rockettes, Earth, Wind, and Fire, and Dolly Parton plug in a strand of Christmas lights. Vince in Illinois. Jim, my beef is with the creditors who call me on Christmas Day while the family is opening gifts regarding the credit cards that I used to buy said gifts. You parasites will get your money when I'm damn good and ready. Can you please give us one day off, one day of peace, at least until the newness of the gifts have worn off? Thanks, Jim in Temecula. Dude, do you really get that phone call on Christmas Day? Hey, man, I'm not saying that's an easy gig, being the one who's got to call for cash, the creditor. But, man, if you're calling people on Christmas Day, that is cold-blooded. Then again, bro, maybe you don't finance Christmas gifts that you can't afford. I don't know. Hey, Rome, here's my beef. It just happened this morning. It's with Wake and Bake Guy in the Starbucks line. This smells like he just harvested a field of weed. And keep in mind that we both have masks on. Come on, dude. I guess you have to fix your head before your day starts, but do us all a favor and spray some Axe. Chew some freaking gum, you burnout. Aaron in Iowa, bravo. Jim, I got a beef with my neighbor across the street who has a motion-controlled spotlight pointed directly at my house. Every time somebody walks down the sidewalk at night, my baggy neighbor's spotlight lights up my front room like a police helicopter searching for a burglar. Put that thing at the ground before I do it for you. Good job, Brent. Brent in PC. This is not a competition or a contest, but that's my favorite one so far. Hey, Jim. My beef is with tire pressure warning lights. Is my tire actually only 2 pounds low, or is it getting ready to separate itself from rim and thrust me into oncoming traffic? Signed, Howie, a.k.a. 45 Got Fat. That's good, too. Those things are temperamental, aren't they? Like, I want to gauge. I don't trust those sensors. I want to gauge like a gas gauge. Dear Van Smack, I've got beef with people from New York City saying that they're getting, quote, online when standing in a row with other people. Hey, New Yorkers, getting online is when you open Google Chrome. Were the Buffalo Bills being New York State's one and only NFL team? Brady, Rochester. Dear Jim, my beef is with everyone telling me to stay safe this year. I'm trying, mate, but having safe sex ain't that easy when there's a 6-month production delay on hot air balloons. Signed, Greg. And he's got the hammer emoji. You see what Brett and Bugahaw did there? I do. He's suggesting that Greg needs a hot air balloon as a rubber. You see what he did there? James Rome III. What's my beef? My beef is when I hit Mastro's Ocean Club, order Wagyu, but I get served USDA Prime. Signed, Beauregard in Pacific Palisades. Would you take a bow, Bo? Take a bow, Bo. First of all, I bet that didn't happen. Secondly, take a bow, Bo. That is good. Hey, man, I don't want your USDA Prime. I ordered the Wagyu. You know who the hell I am? I'm Beauregard. You know where the hell I live? The Palisades. Hey, boss man, I got a beef with you saying that I don't have my own jungle song. Regards, Ike's back was aching.
Rick's back is aching, oh. Arthritic fingers, oh.
It's lit!
He was drooling out his mouth. Ike's back is aching, oh, oh,
oh, oh. That's not a
no. Arthritic fingers. I'm not laughing because that's funny. I don't even know why I'm laughing, because it's not funny. Over the top TP tweets, my beef is with the idiots that waste an entire roll of valuable airport bathroom TP to cover the toilet seat. Look up, you kook. There is specifically designed wax paper in the shape of a damn toilet seat right in front of you. Brian underscore Dino. Quote, you know what my beef is? It's the same as every other clones. That garbage song garbage. Bernie unleashed upon us yesterday. Still so angry.
Rick V. Adam Hawk. Rick V. Adam Hawk. What's the money line?
Mike and LFK tweets. Adam Hawk. My beef is with Bernard, a.k.a. Burn Dog, and that nightmare I had last night while asleep. I was in an interrogation room, blindfolded and being tortured with that trash song he submitted to the jungle. I'd rather be waterboarded with gasoline. Hi, Jim. You want to know what my beef is? My beef is with people applauding when the plane lands. What the hell would you expect? You've got a 1 in 11 million chance of a crash. Do you applaud when your Uber drops you off at your destination? Stop. Bella B in Calgary. Patrick tweets, my beef is having to update Adobe Flash Player every time I open up my lapper. I like that. That's good. 12 Wood, my only beef is that I can't get that stupid Rit V Hawk song out of my head.
Rit V Adam Hawk, Rit V Adam
at
Hawk.
At Mock Moda tweets, line, Rit V Adam my Hawk. Beef is GPA. Adam Hawk GPA. Beef V Adam Hawk Rit V Adam Hawk Rit V Adam Hawk.
Rit V Adam Hawk, Rit V Adam Hawk.
Thanks, Mock Moda. Let's go to the phones. Rapid fire phone beef. Let's go to Northern California. Ryan. Ryan, what's your beef?
Hey, Rome. I got a beef with people that don't admit to liking Hawaiian and ham pizza, as it's some sort of pizza heresy. Yet when all the pizza shows up, the first pie to go is the ham and pineapple.
I like that, Ryan. I'm with you.
I'm out.
That is heresy. I don't order it anymore, but when I was younger and in my college days, I'd hit that. The Canadian bacon, pineapple, pizza, that was good. I'm with you. Heresy. Let's go to Colorado Springs. It's the beef segment. Chris, good to have you. What's your beef?
Hey, Jim, my beef as a stay-at-home uncle is with radio commercials that are four times louder than the show I'm listening to. Never fails. I almost have my niece to sleep, and then I got you yelling at me about Granger or the delicious, nutritious Old Trapper. Just turn it down. We get it. Thanks, out.
My man, I just want to make sure you're getting the message. They're important messages. I'm not yelling at you about Granger. I'm just making sure you know the benefits. For the ones that get it done. Hey, Chris. Granger! For the ones who get it done! He's a stay-at-home uncle, he said. Let's go this time to Omaha, Nebraska. Kathleen, I know you have beef. What is it?
Who gives a rat's furry ass about a Christmas tree lighting? I cannot tolerate Christmas music. Johannes Ekström is the only one who get me to tolerate because he's a fabulous singer. He's the frontman of Avatar, and I have all eight of their albums except for their two EPs.
Okay, got it. You know what? I'll rack you, Kathleen. You're really angry and really loud. And generally, I have no idea what you're talking about. For real?
War Lady Clone.
Let's go to Larry. Parody Larry has a beef, apparently. Lawrence, what is your beef?
Hey, Jim, my beef is with one Bob Griffin III. So RG3 once was the franchisee, then got a busted knee. Now he's the Ravens QB. Let's watch and see. The Steelers don't a D. Gonna light him up like a Christmas tree.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that. Used the What's Your Beef segment to do a parody. Wow. Parody Larry somehow working his way in. That is your beef segment. Well done. Well done. Got some phone calls in there. Some great beefs once again. And on social, we kept our streak alive. It never fails. It always works. Y'all always have beefs. It always makes me laugh. He is, as you know, a San Quentin basketball legend. He is Bob Myers. Bob, it has been a minute or two since we have spoken. Bob, how are you doing? How's life?
Oh, man. Yeah, we haven't talked in a little while. How are you doing? I'm fine. I'm just, you know, this is a different deal, Jim. This whole deal. Life, work, maybe, I don't know. I guess everybody's got a different degree of difficulty. I'm not comparing to the people that are actually have struggled with this physically or working on the front lines of it. I don't know what that's like. I imagine that's got to be extremely difficult. But in sports, if we're talking about sports, it just adds a huge layer to what already is probably all-encompassing job. And so, you know, we all do our best with it, but there's no blueprint for this. There's no handbook, and you just try to move through it the best way you can.
I think that's well said. There is no playbook for something like this, and you're right, Bob. It is a very different deal, a very different deal for everybody. You know, I'm going to jump into it and ask you some basketball questions. Like, it's been so much of a roller coaster, Bob, going back to the 2019 finals, injuries to Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant, then the departure of Kevin Durant, the challenges of last season. And then on the day of this year's draft, of course, comes word that Klay Thompson had suffered the injury in Southern California. What was your reaction when you first heard that news?
I don't even know what to say about it. I mean, that was just the timing, the actual what happened. I don't even know, Jim. I mean, I'm still reeling with that one because the draft, for people that are listening, it can take over your whole month. It takes over your mind. It takes over your energy because you just want to try to get it right. And we had the number two pick, and we had some second-round picks, and there's all these thoughts whirling in your head and all these variables that you're trying to deal with. But on top of that, you don't really expect to be dealing with one of your best players getting hurt on that day, on that afternoon, 3 hours preceding the draft. And so, it, you know, as people, we probably can deal with more than we think we can, but it doesn't mean you should have to. And so with this news, there was a surrealness to it, and it was kind of like, there's not great words, but the best ones I can convey are, you have these thoughts like, are you effing kidding me? I mean,
right?
Are you kidding me? And there's so many layers to how you process it. There's first the empathy for Klay, right? That's the first thing you do. And you go, this guy loves the game, is well-respected, obviously hugely important to our organization. I know him personally. So just kind of trying to go to where his mind is. And then organizationally going, what does this mean? And you got about 2 hours. Does this mean something we should do differently? Does this mean we should revisit everything? Luckily, I was with our owner, Joe Lacob, and Kerr was right next to me. And I got the first call and walked out of the room. And Joe saw the look on my face, and he said, what, because the guy, Clay's agent, texted me and said, ASAP, call me. And I was in the middle of talking to my owner who was sitting to my left, and I said, I gotta take this. And he looked at me, and it was one of those calls where, you know, you're a human being. We've all had these calls where, like, something's bad. This is not good. And so he looked at me, and I said something. I go, this is not, I don't know what it is, but, and then I came back, and I gave him the things you don't want to hear in sports are ACL and Achilles. You don't want to hear those words. And I walked back in the room. I said, I think it might be Achilles. I got to go. And then I called Kerr and him. We went into my office, and, you know, we didn't know, but I think we kind of knew. It was a classic. When Kobe got hurt with his Achilles, I always remember when you hurt your Achilles, I was at that game, the Laker game, we hurt his, and Harrison Barnes was guarding him. And I said, Harrison, what did he say? And he goes, he grabbed me right after he tore his Achilles and said, did you kick me in the back of the leg? And this is how smart Kobe is. Like, this is how fast thinking he is or was, unfortunately. He knew right away, if Harrison didn't kick me in the back of the leg, I just tore my Achilles. So when a player tears their Achilles, if you're around the game, it feels like, and the people that are listening, maybe you have, feels like it kicked in the back of the shin. Like, and nobody obviously did. That's what it feels like, though, because that's your Achilles tearing. And so when we talk to Klay, Klay says, it felt like I got kicked in the back of the leg. And that's kind of like, that's the one thing you don't want to hear. And so we were in the office, and we kind of knew. We did the MRI the next day, but we didn't. We kind of, when you hear that, you kind of know. And then we called staff, and, you know, everybody asked, what did you say to staff? I said, what are you going to say? you think Clay tore his Achilles? And he just, what do you say after that? There's nothing to say. I mean, so he was just, he was speechless. I didn't have any words of comfort. I mean, I mean, everybody's kind of processing it individually. And I don't know, Jim, look, I don't want to compare it. Again, this is sports. He'll be okay. I'll be okay. We'll be okay. But for us, professionally, this one hurt. But if you want me to qualify it and say compared to what most people are dealing with, yeah, it's, you know, there's a lot of things going on in the world. But in sports, those are the ones you don't want to hear and you don't want to deal with. The health stuff is always the hardest to navigate.
Bob Myers, my guest. Bob, this is why I appreciate you so much, and I appreciate that response very, very much. And you're right. I would imagine the response was, are you effing kidding me? After everything he'd already been through and gotten that close to coming back and was right there on the precipice. I mean, there's just some things that are inexplicable, to be certain. Bob Myers is my guest. Bob, you mentioned your owner, Joe Lacob. And the thing is, his response was really interesting because you immediately go out there and you trade for Kelly Oubre Jr., which is significant for a number of reasons. And I bring that up because not only what he brings to the team, but that it's a massive statement in the sense that there's a massive hike in the payroll tax. A lot of owners might refuse to do that. What's that say about Joe that he's willing to do that after the injury to Clay and after already winning three championships?
Yeah, Jim, that's a really good question. And what I'm about to say for the people listening, I'm not giving you the company line here. That's all I can preface this with. I did say, like, hey, man, it's going to be tough now without Clay. You know, it's just take any team in the NBA, it's a different sport. You take away one of your top two players, top three, you know, it makes it very, very hard to win a championship. Any team. You can name any team in the league, and I'll tell you, if they lost, you know, one of the top two, three guys, like you're just being realistic. It sucks to say, but it's just life. So he easily could have said, you know what, I'm not spending an extra tens of millions of dollars here. And I couldn't have blamed him for that. But I said this when we introduced Wiseman and Nico Mannion, our draft picks. This guy wants to win more than I could even really comprehend sometimes. Because I'll tell you what, most GMs would want that okay from their owner and just rush into it. And then I even asked, I said, are you sure? And this guy, any GM in any sport, and there's, you know, if you look at the four major sports in the U.S., there's 120 of us roughly. I'll tell you what I've been blessed with. My owner wants to win. And when we have fans, we do fine, profitable. When we don't, we lose money. And a lot of people are losing money right now. Again, to qualify, we're a professional sports team. But this would be a very fair time, or would have been, for our owner to say, yeah, you know what, let's not pour more money into this. And he never, not for one second, Jim, did he say, I don't even think he had that thought. I did. You know, you might have, if you owned our team, and I said, Jim, you'd say, you know what, Bob, I want to be competitive, but maybe this isn't the time. I mean, this guy, he went all in. And I'm lucky, and our fans, for that matter. If anybody listens to Warriors fan, like, this is the type of owner. I'll tell you what, people are listening, I'm going to guess, are probably sports fans, and you probably have some favorite team. This is the kind of owner you want. I promise you, Jim, you've been doing this longer than I have. No fans care about how much money their team is making or losing. And by the way, they shouldn't. What do they care? So, in essence, that means you want to have an owner, or you want to. One thing I learned about sports is the people that are fans out there of any team, you better hope you have good ownership, because if you don't have good ownership, it's going to make it hard for your team to win consistently. So I'm lucky to have a guy like Joe and Peter Guber and the whole ownership group to support what we do.
Not only, Bob, do I accept what you just said, I would take this one step further. I would say, pandemic aside, I would even argue that not every owner of every professional franchise wants to win or wants to win that badly, because oftentimes winning is very expensive and they're more than happy doing just what they have to do to keep the fans coming and do business and make a profit and then affect the bottom line. I don't even think that every owner, as crazy as that sound, actually wants to win or pay the price that it costs.
And I think, you know, look, let's say you, Jim, you're a multi-billionaire or any fan. And a lot of these guys, you're right. I mean, here's what happens. You make 10, 15, whatever billion dollars, and you go, what am I going to do now in life? You know what? What's the most hardest thing to do is buy a professional sports team. Like, that's a club. There's a lot of billionaires, and I'm not diminishing what it takes to be a billionaire. I have no idea. I'm not a billionaire, and I never will be. But there's a lot of them out there in our country, or in the world, for that matter. But a lot of these guys or women, anybody, what they want to be is in this exclusive. I want to own a professional team. Now, that there's only 120 of those in the country, and then it becomes your right. So sometimes it's not, I'm going to pour my heart and soul into this endeavor of winning. It's just, you know what? This is a good investment. Might as well. But it, again, and I'm not telling fans, you can be a fan wherever you want to be. But the ownership piece, I don't want to make this about a business. But if you look at teams that are highly successful, that they consistently win, it's a lot to do with ownership. Because it starts with ownership. I got hired because of our owner. Our owner hires, they make these decisions. They hire a GM, they fire a GM, they hire a coach, they fire a coach. Especially now, Jim, used to be a team could be bought for $25 million however many years ago. These teams now, billions of dollars. Do you think owners are just going to say, I spent $3 billion or $2 billion or $1 billion on this team. I'm just going to let some guy run it. Just like if you bought a team, you'd be like, I spent whatever, $2 billion to buy the Chargers, and you're like, I want to know who we're drafting it at the fifth pick in the draft. That's what's fun about owning a team. So that's why I'm really lucky. My guy loves it. He was the season ticket holder before he bought the team. He watches games. He texted me last night watching the Kansas-Kentucky game. I mean, this guy loves it, and so I'm lucky. Some people would say that's too intrusive. I love it. My owner's all in on and all in on the game and the sport and wants to win.
Bob Myers joining us. You know, Bob, it's a really, really bad analogy, but one of the reasons that we got into horse racing, and I never thought that I would, I mean, I love the animals. I absolutely love the animals, but it's what you're talking about. Like, I want to be a part of the process. Like, I would never, ever tell the trainer what to do because that's their business and I don't know, but I just like the process. I like being a part of it. You know, where are we going to run? When are we going to run? What are our chances? Who are we running against? It's like on a much, much smaller level. We feel like not that we own a franchise, but we're a part of the process. So I know exactly what you're talking about. And I could ask you any number of things. It's always an amazing conversation, Bob, and I appreciate it. I want to ask you about Andrew Bogut before you go, because he announced his retirement yesterday. And this guy, man, he is a one-of-a-kind character. He was one of the first moves that was made when you were an assistant GM. What do you remember about that? And then what did he mean to the organization?
Yeah, Bogut's he meant a heck of a lot. It was one of the biggest things we did initially to kind of help pivot the team. And we got a former number one pick, well-established, and a defensive player. But Andrew, personally, he's one of the most highly intelligent people you're going to meet. Andrew is funny, and I say this in a kind way. With Andrew, you're guilty until proven innocent. Andrew doesn't suffer fools. So he will call you out directly. He wants the truth. Good, bad, or ugly. He saw through a lot of the NBA that wasn't real. I mean, there's a lot of it, just like an entertainment gym, and there's a lot of it that's stuff that's fluff. And he wanted the authentic side of sports. He loved playing, loved the competition, but he could leave a lot of the other stuff behind. Very kind of cutting sense of humor. But for us, Jim, he helped us win a championship, and we hadn't won one in 40 years. So, I mean, that's why I texted him the other day. I said, anything you need, congratulations on a great career. You'll always have a home with us and anything. And I hope he comes and visits. I don't know if he's going to stay in Australia or come back to the Bay or what he'll do. But fascinating guy. Love the fact that he's got an international perspective. Love talking about Australian, their culture. He's got a great – all the international people, I'm sure you know some. I love hearing about views of our country from people that live outside our country. I think it's fascinating. So many things about Andrew on the court I'll miss, but his personality and his character are highly unique, and he helped, like I said, professionally, he was awesome for us. I mean, he gave us something we never had in the center position and helped us win a championship.
He is the president of basketball ops and the GM of the Golden State Warriors and has led them to 3 NBA championships, 5 straight conference titles. He is a San Quentin basketball legend, a very, very good friend of the program. Bob, I appreciate your thoughts. It had been a minute or two. It's so good to get caught up. I know it's been a really challenging time and a really difficult time, but it's always great to talk to you, Bob. Thanks so much for that.
Thanks, Jim. I one day we'll get not the time to go back into San Quentin and play hoops right now, but hopefully I look forward to getting back in there when we can.
Yeah, no, so. I appreciate that too, Bob. Thanks so much. I was communicating with Ray Ritter last night, and I said, man, I will never, ever, ever not take you up on an opportunity ever again, man. What a year it's been. All right, Bob, thank you so much.
All right.
Good night now.